I have been working my way through Genesis the last month. It's been a wonderful experience for me. I love preaching on the Old Testament, the images, the stories, the characters, the personalities that we find in the book of Genesis are rich for preaching. They speak to us of life. They speak to us of the challenges of life, the fears of life, the joys of life, the wonderful problems that we all face can be found in the pages of the Old Testament and in the experiences, indeed, the experiences of the patriarchs. And so we turn again to the book of Genesis, to the story of Abraham and the call that Abraham received to sacrifice his son, his only son, to God on Mount Moriah. Must have been an absolutely terrifying call that he received, an absolutely unexpected and terrifying call to take the child of promise, the child whom God had said through him would come children like the stars up in the heavens and the sands by the seashore. It must have been a mind-bending experience to hear God say, take the child of promise, the child of your old age, and kill him. Now, it must be said that there are times in a father's life when the desire to do that to their own son must be great. Dads, I see my dad nodding. Which son are you talking about? No, don't you answer that question either. Because he might say both, and then I'm really in trouble. I'll leave it ambiguous for a while. God told Abraham, long before Isaac was born, that he would be the father of many nations, that he and Sarah would be the father of many nations. And from him and from her specifically, and him together, would come many nations. Children like the stars up in the heavens, and children like the sands by the seashore. There are going to have to be a lot of people to inhabit the land that God had promised. And through them, all the nations of the world will be blessed. So here we are, several years after Isaac is born. He's a teenager, probably, although there are debates as to whether or not he was a child of about 10 or a child of about 16 or a child of about 36. The debates go on. Let us say a teenager of about 15 years old, just to make the argument. And God has said, now, Abraham, you're 110, 115, so your wife's now 100. I made this promise to you. Now I want you to take that kid through whom that promise is going to be fulfilled and take him up on a mountain and sacrifice him for me. Slay him for me as a burnt offering. Kill him. Now, I don't know about you, but that would test my faith just a little bit. Wouldn't it yours? It would test my faith just a little bit. I had heard the promise of God. I had heard the promise that God had made about Isaac. And I'd seen it fulfilled against all possible odds. I'm 100. My wife's 90. We tried to get it done our own way, and that was a mistake. God works a miracle. She conceives and has this child, a child of promise, a wonderful gift of God, a manifestation of God's grace in their lives. Wow, when a kid, I'm not going to take him up on that mountain and slay him. Are you crazy? God, you must be nuts. That's not what Abraham did. The promise is made, the command is made to slay his son in verse 2. Take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains that I shall show you. And immediately it says, so Abraham arose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac. He cut the wood for the burnt offering and set out and went to the place in the distance that God had shown him. Must have been a trip, because on the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place far away. Then Abraham said to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey. The boy and I will go over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you." Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. So the two of them walked on together. Now Isaac said to his father Abraham, "Father!" And Abraham said, "Here I am, my son." Isaac said, "The fire and the wood are here, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" I mean, Isaac knew that you usually had burnt offering. You used a lamb, and you take the lamb, and you do like a Japanese chef does at Kobe Steaks up there in Addison. He takes the meat, and he chops it up into bits and puts it on the thing and lets it burn up and sticks the chunks of wood, chunks of meat together, and it makes a wonderful, wonderful smell, the burnt offering. I don't know if they added any of the soy sauce and had any chopped onions and broccoli and all the other stuff that goes with the stir fry that they have there at Kobe Steaks, but essentially that's what Abraham is going to do to the burnt offering. And Isaac knew you normally did that with a lamb. So he asked, where's the lamb, Dad? Where's the lamb, Dad? And Abraham said, "God himself will provide the lamb for a burnt offering, my son." So the two of them walked on together. When they came to the place that God had shown him, Abraham built an altar there and laid the wood in order. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to kill him. Kill his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from the heavens and said, "Abraham, Abraham!" And I'm certain I can just see Abraham there in my mind's eye with that knife raised, ready to plunge it into my son's chest. And he's going, and then suddenly the angel says, "Abraham, Abraham!" And I'm sure he goes, "Oh, whew, oh yeah, here I am. Man, it took you forever, angel. Here I am." Oh, if only we would all call out when God calls to us, we'd all go, "Here I am," as anxiously and as quickly as Abraham did here. "Here I am," he said. "Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." Powerful passage. A passage that I could preach on many different ways today. But I want to look today at how this is a test of faith. All through the story, it seems as though Abraham had no question about what he was going to do. God says, "Well, take your son, kill him." And, you know, Abraham goes, "Good, good, kill the boy, kill the boy. Come on, let's go kill him." Did he tell Sarah where he was taking him? Oh dear, God called the other day, and he wants me to take our son, our only son, the son that you had when you were 90 years old. Wasn't that fun? Take him up the mountain and kill him. What do you think about that, dear? Do you think we ought to do that? Think we ought to take your son, take him out and kill him? I'm sure Sarah said, "Oh, yeah, sure, that sounds like a good idea to me. Just take him on. Have fun, dear. Bring him back the doggy bag." And that's gross, isn't it? But sacrifices were gross, friends. They were gross. You took a lamb that you had lived with. You brought into your house, and the family had come to know and come to love. You brought a lamb in, and the family, the children who played with the lamb, it became like a pet. And then you take that lamb, and you pour on that lamb the sins that you had, and then you take him out into the wilderness. You take him up, you lay out some stones, and you put some wood on the stones, and you take the lamb while he's alive, and you tie his feet, and you tie his paws on either side, and you put him up on the altar, and you take out your knife, your ginsu, and you just chop him into chunks, little squares and cubes. And then you rearrange the wood, the bloody chunks of the lamb all over the wood. And then you light the wood and let it roast. And the smoke would billow up into the air as a sweet-smelling, fragrant offering to God. The smell of barbecue. God must have been a Texan. Oh, the smell of that barbecue lamb. I'm making myself hungry. That's what God told Abraham to do with Isaac. Take his son and kill him as a burnt offering. And Abraham, okay, takes his donkey and saddles him, gets some wood, chops it, puts it on the donkey, gets his son, gets two servant boys, and they head out off on the road to Moriah. They get 3 days later, they see it in the distance. Abraham says to the guys with him, "You wait here, we're going to go off, we're going to worship, then we'll come right back." They go up the mountain, and as they're going up the mountain, Isaac, smart kid, says, "Where's the lamb?" "God will provide." The ironic thing is God had already provided. "And you be him, son." With that knife raised, in that moment, that penultimate moment of faith, when Abraham was to shove that knife into his son and chop his boy into pieces, God stops him. "Because you would not withhold your only son from me." Oh, Abraham, I know you have faith in me. I know you trust me. You were willing to give up to me, God said, that gift which I gave you. That gift, that grace, that unexpected, unearned, impossible gift that I gave you, you were willing to give back to me because your faith was so great. I give him back to you now. That's exactly what he did. Because then there suddenly was a lamb caught in the thicket, a ram with his horns caught in the thicket. And he takes him and he uses him as the burnt offering instead of Isaac. Where is faith in this story? It seems to be all throughout it. Faith was when he raised the knife to plunge it into his son's heart. Faith was when he took and bound his son and put him on the altar. Faith was when he built the altar itself with the wood and the rocks. Faith was when he said, "The Lord will provide." Faith was when he told the two boys who went with him and Isaac to the land of Moriah. Faith was when he told them, "I and the lad will go, we will worship, and we will return." Did you note that? Every time I read this passage, every time I read this story, this sticks out at me. He says, "Stay here with the donkey. The boy and I will go over there. We will worship," which includes sacrifice, friends. "And then we will come back to you." We, not I, we will come back to you. Faith, my friends. Abraham knew what God had told him to do. He set out to do it. Every step along the way, from saddling his donkey to cutting the wood, to getting the two boys, to heading out on the road to Moriah, all of these acts from there straight until he lifted the knife to plunge it into his son were acts of faith, trusting that God's promises were secure, and no matter what happened, no matter what circumstance faced him, no matter what he was called to do, God's promises were sound and secure, and nothing could change that. God told him to kill his son. God's promise said, through this son, you'd have kids like the stars up in the heavens and the sands by the seashore. Did Abraham know God was going to stop him? I don't know. I imagine Abraham himself was in the middle of this process going, thinking to himself, "Is God going to stop me or what? Am I going to have to actually do it? And then God raised the kid from the dead? Is God going to stop me?" And yet he knew by faith, he knew. So no matter what happened, he would come back down the mountain. He and his son Isaac would come back down the mountain to meet up with his two young men. Faith, my friends. Faith encompasses the whole story. Faith in the face of abject absurdity. God said, "Through this son, you'll have lots of kids." And then says, "Take your son and kill him." How can both happen at the same time? It takes faith to know that God's ways are not our ways. God will work His will, His way, every time. And His promises are secure, no matter what we may think of what we see. And that's a promise for you and me today, friends. To know that no matter what faces you today, no matter what trial, what tribulation, what mountain you have to climb, no matter what sacrifice you have to make, you can know that God's promises are secure, His promises are true, and you can trust in faith in them. That's good news for us today, friends, because some of us in this congregation are facing some pretty tough sacrifices. Some of us don't know what path God has for us. Some of us are wondering, God, am I supposed to climb this mountain? Am I supposed to do what I think I hear you saying I'm supposed to do? This seems crazy. My friends, in moments like that, we can hear and see with Abraham the wonderful good news that no matter what we face, no matter what difficulty comes around, we can know that God's grace, God's promises, God's love is supreme, and we can trust in Him. He does provide the sacrifice. He provided the sacrifice for Abraham and Isaac, and it wasn't Isaac. And He provides a sacrifice for you and for me. And my friends, it wasn't us. It was His Son, Jesus Christ. Throughout the history of the church, this passage has been looked at as a wonderful shadow of Jesus. A wonderful shadow. Move over to where you're between the display and the wall. Now, you see that black spot behind Zelma in the blue? That's called a shadow. What is more real, Zelma or the shadow? Be kind. Zelma, right? What's casting the shadow? Zelma, her body. It's in the way. And there's a theological interpretation known as typology, which says is that things in one part of the Bible can cast the shadow into another part. For instance, Jesus in the New Testament as a type casts His shadow into the Old Testament to symbolize and be known and present in the Old Testament in many different stories, in many different persons, in many different places and events. And this is one of them. Jesus is the only begotten Son, the child of promise, the child who was impossible because Mary was a young girl virgin, not yet capable of having a child. And yet through her, through a miraculous conception, God was born among us in Jesus of Nazareth. And He took the wood of the cross upon Him. And He carried it up the mount outside of Jerusalem, Golgotha. And there He was sacrificed for you and me. Isaac is a shadow of that in the Old Testament. The Father takes the wood and puts it on His Son and takes Him up the mount to be sacrificed. God provided Isaac. God provided Jesus. God provided the ram who was then sacrificed on the altar. We can trust in God that He will provide all that we need. He will provide the grace that we need to say yes to His promises, to say yes to the calling He has upon us, to say yes to what He wants us to do, and then to step out in faith and do it. Faith is not passive, friends. It's active. And Abraham had active faith, knowing that God's promises were secure. That's the promise for you and me today. To know that in Jesus Christ, all the promises of God are secure for us. And if we will trust Him in faith, He will see us through the difficulties, the mountains, the trials, the tribulations, the sacrifices of this life, and into life eternal. The promises of God are secure, and God provides the grace, the sacrifice that we need. My brothers and sisters, as you face this week of trials and tribulations, as you face this week of difficult mountains to climb, as you face this week of sacrifices to make, trust that God's promises are secure and you can trust in faith in Him and He will provide. In the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and that the people of God say, Amen.